preparing for that big negotiation and what happens, what can happen if you fail to prepare? We get a lot of questions from our clients about bigger negotiations that they have coming up and that fix that they can use in order to make them do well in the negotiation, what to do to prepare for the negotiation. And so this is probably going to come across as a big letdown if there is no quick fix. The quick fix is to practice. We say it takes 64 to 67 reps to pave those neural pathways, and you really, really want to have that implemented before your big, big negotiation. We want this to be a second nature to you, so that when your amygdala is hijacked and the fight or flight or make friends behavior is kicking in, you're leaning into the skills because you trust the skills so much that you know that they work. And I'm going to tell a story. I actually remember one of my first negotiations as a young negotiator. I was probably in my 20s. And not many people know this, but I had the honor of training with Derek Gaunt. Derek was my lieutenant on the negotiations team that I worked on. And so we trained all the time. We would do what we called back-to-backs and role play, just between everybody on the team. And at minimum, we would meet once a month and train. And all of us had our negotiator tools sitting next to us in our bags. I happened to be a detective at the same time, so I used the tools in my interviews. And I remember we got called to an incident in Falls Church. This guy had been he was his father had left to an elderly care home. His mother had recently passed away, and he was very routine oriented. We later learned that he was what's called schizotypo. And so he was not happy with the fact that the family had to sell the home in order to pay for the father's care. And they were having trouble getting him to move. They had, long story short, they had a sheriff stop by, and he ended up dousing himself in gasoline and threatening to light the match. And then he started shooting at officers who arrived later at the door and kind of retreating into this upper area of the home where negotiations began. And so by the time Alexandria was called out, we were called to assist because teams are rotated through. They only stay on every so many hours, and then you call on another team because you're just exhausted. And so here I am, a young negotiator, and it's the big negotiation. And I knew that the entire team would be listening to my negotiation. So you have SWAT out there, you have your much more experienced negotiators out there, and I was primary. And so I was very grateful because, as this very, very nervous negotiator who had I mean, I could feel the stress in my body. I could feel it in my belly. I was going into the knock, and I'm like, I've got to do a good job. And so the only thing that I trusted to do a good job, because I had happened to be involved in a negotiation prior, actually, outside of being a negotiator, I was called to a scene, and I didn't have these skills. And I did okay, but I didn't do as great as I would have done if I had had the skills. And so this was the first negotiation where I had prepped and I was a true negotiator. And so I leaned in. I leaned in and trusted the skills. And as Derek teaches many of us, he taught me back then, I started with a summary. And I laid out on my little notebook before getting on the phone a very long summary of this guy's world as it looked to him. I stood on that side of the street, his side of the street with him, and painted the picture of the world and what the world must look like from his perspective and how it made him feel. And I remember being so nervous as I went through this. So I was so nervous that most people, so my name's Marcella. Most people call me Marcella. What a lot, actually, Derek, you'll probably catch him calling me Marcy every once in a while. I remember being so nervous that I got on the phone and I introduced myself as my familial name, which is Marcy. And that's just because of where my gut was at the time. But I threw the summary out there and I trusted the summary. I trusted the skill set, and it gave me a chance to catch my breath because the summary hit. I was curious and I started to truly listen, and he responded well to the summary, which gave me a chance to then look at my other skills, the other tools in my toolbox, and respond with labels and mirrors, paraphrases. Long story short is it was like a 7-hour negotiation. And we got him out after another transition and all this other stuff, but it went well. And the only reason it went so well is because I was new and I had nothing else to fall back on other than my skills. I didn't have these bad habits. And it was probably one of the best things that happened in my career because it proved to me how well they worked. And then it just grew from there.
Marcel, you mentioned that you had time to prepare a summary. So it sounds like you had to be listening to what was happening before you in prep.
Yes. So there was a little bit of prep. I wasn't listening to the negotiation. We got on scene. It was like, you're number one, go meet with the team. So I met with the team that we were transitioning with, and they summarized what was happening to me. And as that was happening, I was coming up with strategy. I also had my team, and I'll talk about that in this conversation, because we don't do things in a silo in true hostage negotiation world. I'm not negotiating by myself. I might be the one on the mic listening with the headset, but I have a coach, and we have mental health there. We have intel. Our entire team is there listening and waiting and interpreting the information. Because what do we say tactical empathy is all about? It's not just interpreting it and understanding it. It's articulating it back, that understanding back to the other side. And because you're under stress in a high stress negotiation, you're seeing it, you're in tunnel vision. You really do need that team to help you kind of navigate through not missing the black swans.
And it also sounds like that summary, even though you were prepared, to need space once you got into the game. And it sounded like that summary gave you that space to actually get settled.
Yes. Yeah. And that doesn't mean I was perfect. I was actually quite the opposite. I remember, and I still kind of laugh because it was a recorded negotiation. So I've listened to it since, but I remember giving an iMessage at one point during the several hours that we were negotiating. And I messed up on the iMessage, so I remember messing up on the iMessage, hearing myself mess up, and then pivoting into a label or a mirror and just getting right back on track. So it doesn't mean that the skills, knowing the skills and falling back on the skills doesn't mean that you're going to be perfect all the time. In fact, I think that it's important to strive to be your best. You also have to give yourself grace. Because really what we're prepping for is to stay in that negotiator seat and to listen at that highest level of listening, which is that empathetic listening. What does the world look like to them? What's their motivation, their perspective, the environment, the circumstances? What brought them here? Because we're all so very different and our perspectives are different because of our backgrounds.
I hear the coaches talk about a lot of our coaching clients want to know about sequencing and preparing for this conversation. I asked you about, I said, it sounds like you didn't have a list of all the skills in front of you during the negotiation. And you responded.
I did. Well, I did. I responded with, I absolutely did. So, I think I could probably pull out a notebook somewhere. And this list wasn't as strong as the Black Swan skill set. There are actually some skills that I would have wished I had as a detective and as a hostage negotiation member. There's an acronym that some law enforcement agencies used called MORPIES. So minimal encouragers, open-ended questions, reflecting, emotion labeling, paraphrasing, iMessages, and summaries. And I had that list on the back of a notebook everywhere I went to include my investigations because of how powerful the skill set was.
So prep is practice and practice is prep.
Practice and understand yourself. Understand yourself because you're going to get in your own way. And I'll use myself as an example. I'm an assertive. And although I have tendencies in both of the other camps, of the analyst camp and also the accommodators camp, when I'm pushed up against the wall, when I'm at my worst, I knee-jerk reaction into some of the defaults that are not helpful for me, which is to fight back, get agitated, which gets in the way of actually listening and being curious. And so understanding that about myself and having a team around me that understands that helps me to fumble through those amygdala hijack reactions, those, you know, nonsense kind of thoughts, and not react, be more responsive instead. So I'll give you an example. Analysts love to ask questions. I wouldn't say they love to ask questions. They love data. And when I'm peppered with questions from an analyst who may not be versed in the black swan skill set, I, as an assertive, tend to get defensive and look at that as, oh, they must not trust me. Do they not see me? You know, why do they need all this information? Well, that's a silly question that comes from my own insecurity as an assertive. And so understanding that in myself allows me to give space to my own thoughts and revert back into questioning and being questioning myself and being curious about the other person. Perhaps this person's an analyst. That makes sense, actually. Oh, so data is actually, that's a good thing. The fact that they're asking these questions means that they're actually interested. You know, so we get in our own way if we don't know ourselves. And a lot of what we teach at the Black Swan Group is self-awareness, because it's crucial to a good negotiation. You know, is there going to be a negotiator personality conflict? How do you deal with that? If I'm an assertive, and when I'm tired and I'm exhausted, I come across as blunt and to the point, other people will get offended by that. And just knowing that about myself, if I want to be effective, I'll prep by telling myself to slow my rhythm down, to be more aware of others, to use asking labels, and push into that accommodator's tone, because people are, oh, go ahead. Sounds like looks like you have a question.
Lots. So the prep is not just how you expect the negotiation to go and how to sequence. Your prep includes what to do when you get put on your heels.
Yes. Sorry, I'm having it. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because we teach something called caviar here at the Black Swan Group, which is really all about, we talk about it always being about the other side. The caviar is the one time where it's really about you. And it's all about mindset and going in with the mindset of being able to, as we say, you know, as hostage negotiators say, stay in your seat, which just means remain engaged, be able to listen at that highest level and still be effective, as opposed to falling out of those higher levels of listening. And in caviar, we talk about, you know, identifying yourself and the other person's, you know, being open to the other person being a different person, negotiator personality type than yourself.
We have for the audience, if you have questions, please enter them in the chat. Abigail and CJ are producing the show. They will pull you up on stage and we can get some questions from the audience. We have for the audience, we have two tools that I'm aware of. We have the 6-to-1 prep sheet, and then we have the negotiation prep sheet. Marcella, what right so now in your everyday world, if you're going in to a negotiation, where do you start? I mean, a lot of people are like, okay, I know what a mirror is, I know what a label is, I know what this is. Like, I've got a negotiation. What is the first step?
I start with my team. And by team, I have a formal team. I'm actually, I work with a formal team. It doesn't necessarily need to be a formal team. If you know other people that believe in this skill set and want to get better, you have a team. And if you meet with people on the regular, just to kind of pass the ball around about your negotiations that you're getting into, they're going to help you stay focused through the lens of negotiation. Because so often, and I can say this for myself, so often we fall back into listening in level one and level two, unintentionally. It's not because we're not great negotiators when we try, but even those of us that are, consider ourselves great listeners, we were really not as effective as we should be. And so I need my team. My team practices. We meet weekly and we will walk through, caviar with each other. We'll vent. We'll talk about, things that might distract us from the negotiation. And then we'll talk about the negotiation itself. And we'll put together, we have this wonderful prep sheet through the Black Swan Group. And just going through the motion of putting together a prep sheet for a negotiation puts you in a better mindset for remaining curious. I would also add that it's just doing it on a routine basis is so important, because this is a language. And if you don't routinely engage it, you're going to forget it. And that's when you do have I would say the most difficult negotiations are the ones where you didn't see them coming. You didn't have time. You picked up the phone and you're like, oh, here we are. You want to be so ready that you're in your mind, you're thinking, what can I use? What can I grasp to get traction in this conversation? So you want to practice so much that you fall back on the skill set. You know that this works because you've tried them out. You've given it a chance to prove to you yourself.
I'll share with the audience a little bit of insight behind the curtain. I'll pull back the curtain on the Black Swan Group. We use and practice the skills every day. And one time we were using, not one time, over time we were using the oriented questions too much. And Chris Voss said, okay, no more oriented questions. Figure out a different way. And that sort of put our company in a bit of a good tizzy. And so we started using asking labels and doing things like that. And so, Marcella, when you think about your favorite skills or your default skills, and very specifically, you said you were an assertive. What skills do you rely on to when you recognize the negotiator type, conflict type, what skills do you rely on to buffer those tendencies?
Labels. It used to be that I would, and this may be because I was, I thought that this was the right way. Back before Black Swan was introduced to me, I used to revert into calibrated questions all the time. But labels are really so wonderful because you don't need to be right. You're just reflecting what the other person is giving you. And so often it's a release to the other person. You don't need to have an answer. And as an assertive, I realize that that's, we're goal-oriented people. So I like answers. I like in the back of my head thinking about where this conversation is going. That doesn't help me in a negotiation. We do this exercise with the Black Swan Group. You're familiar with it, I'm sure, called the Passions Exercise. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of my favorite because it's so eye-opening to see a conversation about someone's passion and something that's so, it seems so trivial, and it turns into almost every time I see it happen, people talking about their history, their past, what's important to them, how they grew up. And these are conversations that take 10 minutes.
Yeah. That reminded me, I learned a lot through passions, and I think I learned more through attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Where, for everybody listening, you pick what you're passionate about first. So for me, let's just say I'm passionate about golf, and the other side has to intentionally attack golf. And I have to defend that through labels and staying curious. And I can only use labels. And I thought, wow, this is a really good way to not get angry. Passions, attacks, what other ways do you implement practice as prep in your life in general?
So actually I got this from Sandy Hine. So I'm not going to take credit for this, but going into, you know, your everyday life and going into the grocery store and finding out what you can learn about the other person without really giving a lot of information about yourself. I'm going to have to warn you, because you find yourself going in for groceries and then engaging in conversation and staying there longer than you intended because you just don't want to be rude. But it's a great way to prove to yourself how massively powerful these skills are.
Okay. I'm going to throw a curveball at you because we did not discuss this. I've heard Chris talk about cold reads. And in starting a negotiation, regardless of what it is, you're coming in, there's always that first silence, whether it be picking up the phone or seeing somebody and doing a cold read. Can you talk a little bit about, if you can, about your perspective on cold reads and the benefit of them?
Yes. Trust yourself. So we say that there, you know, our intuition, we can pick up 20 million bits of information just on our intuition alone. And so we read people before they say things, and we're doing it to other people, but they're also doing it to us. And so trust your gut. There's a wonderful book, because I think one of the biggest questions that I find, at least personally, that I get as a coach for the Black Swan Group is, how do I label someone? How do I get to that deeper dive label? Well, usually it's that cold read that'll tell you, because people are telling you how they feel without using the words. And they're doing it in their tone. They're doing it in their body language. And if you're sensing it, that's the cold read that you should trust. And a lot of times clients don't trust their gut enough. They know it. It's there. They're just not willing to take the risk and put it in a label and throw it across the bow. Trust it. Trust that cold read, because that's where you're really going to get the best traction and the most information, quite frankly.
All right. So Mia, you asked a question about how do I find a copy of the prep sheets? That's a great question. And I should know this off the top of my head. We have it in some of our guides, I'm pretty sure, online. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say tune in next week, and I will make sure that we have a download link in this show for everybody to download. So I'll go ahead. So I'm not going to send everybody on a wild goose chase downloading all of our guides, although they are a great resource. I'll make sure that we have the prep sheet as a download from the show next week. CJ, as a producer, you're going to hold me accountable and make sure that we have that. So going back, and I'm going to attempt to make a summary here, Marcella, and you can critique me. Being very deliberate. Preparation is being very deliberate in the skills, so much so that you might have them written down in front of you. Preparation is practice with either through your own mental exercise or with a team, going through caviar. Preparation is identifying what your triggers might be during the negotiation and how you'll handle those triggers when they happen.
Great summary. I would add something we didn't talk about, so it wouldn't be part of your summary, tone. And that's part of your understanding your own personality type, negotiator personality type. Tone is such an effective tool. The way we say something is so much more important than the words actually used. And people pick up, we were talking about those cold reads. So being aware of your own tone and practicing your tone is extremely important. We tend to speed up. Some people tend to speed up when they're excited about things or when they're nervous about things. And we have, within the Black Swan group, we have something called the late night FM DJ voice. That's so important to use in times of crisis or in discussing, you know, price point or, you know, different things that might be difficult for the other side to hear. And so practicing that tone is really important to do before that big negotiation. Cause it's really a self-control thing.
And that is most prevalent. I'm going to use incorrect tone or not conducive to the right outcome tone is more prevalent with assertives.
Well, it depends. Analysts can kind of have a son that I love to talk about who is an 18-year-old analyst, and he's learning himself. An analyst can come off in their tone as aloof and kind of disinterested. And so being aware of, I guess, what works and what doesn't work for you and kind of pushing into that accommodator tone 70-80% of the time where you're approachable and friendly and smiling. Smiling is a big part of this, is important. And so with my kid, he was being read wrong by someone who he cared about very deeply. And she's an accommodator. And so she wasn't getting responses in the way that she was reading what she thought was a non-response. But he's an analyst and he is very comfortable with thinking through things and doesn't necessarily engage the way an accommodator would engage naturally. And so for him, I talked to him about his tone, and I also talked to him about using labels and mirrors more often. And being aware of his being comfortable with silence, because that can also be read negatively.
I'm really glad that I attempted to mislabel, because that's a really good point that we don't hear very often. Most people, when they think about tone, is the aggressive, assertive tone. I don't know why you think I'm yelling at you. Right. That's the tone. But the aloof tone is something that is probably more often misconstrued.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a, you know, as a family member, I fall back into kind of some old habits sometimes, and it doesn't help me, but it looks like you're having a tough day, Sam. But with a young lady who's just going to sit there and read him and drive herself, you know, crazy thinking that he's in a bad mood when he's really just thinking and just kind of being himself. That's just a good thing for him to be aware of, that people read you even when you're not doing anything.
Very cool. All right, so I'm going to throw this out. Last chance for questions. This has been really informative from a standpoint of understanding how to get to the negotiation and understanding what happens when the negotiation might go sideways, you know, and how even prepping for that. And I think what's resonated with me is the creation of space. You know, is those skills of creation of space and allowing yourself the skills to create that time for you to be able to recover. How would you like?
Great. Sorry to interrupt. I'm being an assertive now and interrupting. I apologize.
No, but your tone was right on. No. When we think about implementation, we talked about practice. How would you like for those that attended today to go out and start thinking more about preparation and practice for negotiations?
So, you know, use what is comfortable for you. Using a journal is extremely helpful. Being aware of how often you use labels or mirrors, or at least trying to use labels and mirrors throughout your week, and then writing them down and writing down your struggles is helpful. Meeting with people who want to get better. Surround yourself with people who are like-minded and want to get better, and then use them as your team to continue to implement this skill set, because you'll find yourself gravitating towards how helpful they are for you and in this world.
Right.